Hey everyone, we are live, pal. Unfortunately today, no Andrew Zarian. He's got, you know, he's mentioned the hip issue and he's got to go see the doctor. But I wanted to bring on producer John. John, in the myriad of Andrew Zarian excuses, where does this one fit? Is this one, I don't have Wi-Fi at my home? Or is this a real excuse, do you believe, from Andrew Zarian, John?
I don't believe anything he says anymore. Whenever he says that he's out, like, I'm sorry, but there's some other alternative motive there. I just can't believe any single reason that he gives me anymore.
We're messing with Andrew. John has a much longer relationship with Andrew than I do, but I just wanted to get John's feedback on this one. But Andrew, get well soon. I know you're getting your hip checked, and it can't be fun to have a bad hip. But we do have a great guest co-host, someone who works and does a lot of stuff for this very website. Josh Nason is about to join us. Josh is an editor on this website, as well as the host of a podcast in the F4W network called Josh Nason's Punch Out. Josh, what's up, man?
How we doing? Glad to finally get the invite. Be here coast to coast. I know we had a rivalry with the Celtics and Warriors thing going on, but it's good to be here. And you mentioned I'm an editor. Shout out to all my fellow editors on the website. Joe Currier doing great work. Brian Rose, Ethan Renner doing great work. Ian Carey, a great news writer, has come on board. All of our contributors, I know some of which, you know, also write for Fight Game as well. And also all our subscribers as well. We don't thank those people enough for all the contributions they have. And, you know, they really just make this engine run. All of our podcasters, yourself included, obviously. So, yeah, I always like to start these off with shout out to those people because they do great, great work. And thanks for having me.
No, and, you know, I specifically really enjoy working with the editors because you guys are kind of like the unsung heroes in a sense. You've helped me a ton with getting stuff up. Brian Rose, you know, it's late night Saturday night and I do a Wrestling Observer Radio and Brian Rose is up and, you know, ready to go to put it up super early in the morning. So yeah, you guys do a great job, and is the, like you said, one of the reasons why this website works the way that it does. Let's quickly talk about your podcast for a second, because you get some really interesting guests, and I know you focus on MMA sometimes, and you know this website is predominantly a pro wrestling website, but how would you describe how your podcast fits into this whole ecosystem?
It's a great question. Not very frequent, I'll say that, and that's I don't want to say almost by design, but you know, I listen to a ton of podcasts myself. And one of the things I like to do is make sure that if I'm listening to something, I want that my time is valuable. You know, I want to make sure that it's giving value in some of these different areas that I am interested in. So I look at things like, I don't do typically, you know, like show reviews, because there's a lot of them on this website. You know, obviously yes. You do one as well. I try to find like unique topics that are like in between kind of the big rocks of things of, you know, industry trends, different, you know, what's going on with a major indie promotion, because these things are the lifeblood of pro wrestling. And I think some of the things we kind of take for granted. So I like to focus on those type of things. Certain wrestlers, I think, that I've seen on the indies or, you know, maybe I think on the come up, Carmelo Hayes was one I talked to a couple of years ago that all of a sudden, you know, get signed a few months later. And he's going to be, I think, a really good asset, really good talent for the main roster at some point in the future. I try to do things. I try not to do as frequent of shows because I don't want a show just like everyone else's. I want something where it's a little bit different. It's a little avenue. You know, it's kind of an offshoot of some of the normal topics. I go down the back alleys, I guess you could say, of some of the things in pro wrestling. I used to do way more MMA shows because that was a niche that we had and a niche that I think needed to be filled a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as time has gone on, I've become a little bit less interested in MMA because it's just kind of now it's like a turnkey operation. I did talk about some of my kind of issues with my fandom and some things I'm coming to grips with Jonathan Snowden, talked about that a couple months ago. So it's when I do MMA stuff, it's things that, again, that stand out to me that are a little bit different. But yeah, that's kind of the best way to describe my show is that when you do listen to it, It's a little bit of a different take on a topic, different experts. I'm working with on a good one for tomorrow, potentially another good one for next week that are, yeah, a little bit, yeah, taken from the headlines, but not necessarily the same headlines you're seeing every day.
Yeah, you do something that I like to do, which is you talk to people who are experts or writers, people who may, you know, because there's so many people now who kind of do what we do, which is cover this stuff, but not everyone gets a ton of shine. And you've shined a light on some of these folks, which I really like to do. And I think it's a good way to discuss things, like to bring in somebody who's got a maybe a little bit different point of view than what we normally hear on this website. And I think that stuff is really cool. And from your experience and your background, I know that you enjoy those conversations.
Yeah, totally. I love, this is even going back to the MMA days when I was doing this job and then also some work for some other sites, like I think Bleacher Report was one, Bloody Elbow is another, Fight Magazine, something like that. I always liked seeing, there's the names that you recognize, and then there are ones that all of a sudden you start to see a little bit more and more. That's that space I love to kind of float in right there, because these are the people you're going to be hearing more from years and years in the future. So I want to kind of get an idea of, you know, what they're all about. You obviously, when we have some great voices on this website, I've tried to bring more of a light to as well that have been in our show. Andrew Thompson from Post Wrestling came on last year. It's part of my year-end series. I like to try to get some names there. Jesse Collins is another one. Ethan and Brian from our website, Brian Rose and Ethan Renner came on before. So yeah, it's trying to get different voices into the mix, because sometimes, you know, as we know with, you know, Dave and Brian are the two dominant voices on the website, you tend to sometimes get the same takes parroted from them over and over and over again, with fans and whatever. And you know, sometimes they're good takes, sometimes they're not. But I think it's important to get different perspectives from especially different age groups as well. If I talk to mid-40s people all the time that are strictly from, you know, New England, I would get, you know, kind of the same type of viewpoint. But if I'm talking to someone from San Jose, if I'm talking to someone from Western Canada or someone that is from London, you're going to get those different perspectives, especially if they're different ages, and things that I may assume, some takes I may assume to be true, can maybe completely different for that person. Those are good to kind of bring to the forefront.
Yeah, no, it's great. So let's talk a little bit about something that is, I would consider one of your expertises is, for as far as I can remember, you've been doing the WWE business calls on Twitter, and then you do the wrap up, and they just had one this morning. WWE's revenue is through the roof. It was a very successful quarter. And then if you even compared against last quarter, the numbers look even better, because we were just getting out of, at least we weren't getting out of the pandemic, but WWE was finally getting back to live crowds post WrestleMania. So what were some of the major takeaways for you? What opened your eyes about these numbers?
Sure. And I should tell you, I came into this role or this specialty, one, because no one else on the website really wants to do it. two, actually, I took over from current AEW vice president, which is kind of funny, Chris Harrington, Mookie Harrington, used to do these posts and some of the tweets for us, because he understands us quite a bit. And I kind of took over. Again, I don't have a lot of background in this, even though I got a Series 7 license when I first graduated college, and a very random kind of a life thing. But anyway, getting back to today's call. So I'm always interested in, again, some of the little kind of details that you get through pouring through these reports, and other people do this way better than I do. But some of the things I found interesting, you know, when I did the initial post last night, and I have it up front of me, you know, I look at kind of where some of the increases from the media revenue come from. Is it strictly some of the assumptions is that, oh, it's all going to be just from TV rights. Well, you know, there's like ticket sales, consumer products. Their consumer products are up huge, 44 million year over year, up from 22 million. That's a huge driver. Live event revenue, I mean, I look at that. That was a huge driver. 41 million for the quarter, up from 9.2 million before the quarter, year over year. Obviously, they only had WrestleMania with two nights, but it's a good indication that live event revenue is a huge, it's a nice, huge like piece of business for them. The attendance, you know, the average attendance over the last quarter was 6,800 that shows some strength there as well. Because again, these aren't just all Raws and premium live events and all that. These are weekend house shows in Poughkeepsie, New York, and Lansing, Michigan, and all these smaller regions throughout the country. To me, that's a good indication of how things are going. Obviously, the revenue, the in-house merch, that's been a big thing as well. The video game, brought in almost $6 million. Some of these things you hear about in the call, like the Panini deal that Nick Khan mentioned today, that helped generate $3.1 million.
And what did he exactly say about that deal?
About the Panini deal?
Yeah.
I think this is the first quarter that they've had it. And this is, again, I think you guys have talked about this before. There's this Fanatics deal that they also have. Basically handed over the online shop to them. Panini is, I don't know how long the deal is, because I think that's transitioning to Fanatics as well at some point. So yeah. They put them over strong. It's not like, well, this Panini deal is only in place for a certain amount of time. Millions are millions, and they made $3.1 million in a quarter off the trading card and collectible market. So that's a good thing for them.
Yeah, I'm a little close to the card market, to the collectibles market. And it's pretty interesting, because they announced that Fanatics was going to take over the license. So Fanatics bought Topps, which is the most famous card brand of all time. Right. And so Fanatics bought Topps, and now they got these different licenses. And so they announced that they were going to Fanatics before the Panini deal even started. So I was asking some experts about what does that mean? And they're like, Panini could flood the market if they feel like a lame duck. But the cards themselves, the Prisms, and there's a Select, and I forget there's one more that's out there. They're really high end, and they look great, and they have great autographs, and they've really figured out this parallels where you can get the green version, which is slightly more rare than the normal version. And then there's another different color. You can have like seven different colors and varieties based on, how varied the odds are in getting those cards. So nobody knows how long this Panini deal is. I think the Panini deal was smart for them, because these cards, they do a really good job at making people invest heavily into these cards, and they're not cheap. When that box of Prisms came out, there were several hundred dollars for a box of cards.
Yeah.
So moving back to Fanatics, I mean, it's going to be a good money deal for them too. But I'm just so confused at how long they have this Panini license and why they would announce the Fanatics license before the Panini license even started. It seemed like, from a partnership standpoint, it's kind of a little weird. But I mean, it was successful, and those cards are still going, and you see them on eBay, and they look great. So it's a really good deal. I'm just kind of interested in where they go from here. But okay, so there was some other stuff in there that kind of caught my eye. Triple H had mentioned, and this will kind of help us segue into the next thing we're going to talk about, but Triple H had mentioned like this first day thinking when it comes to what he's doing. And it made me wonder, like, the hardcore WWE audience, they're going to watch no matter who's in charge, whether it's Vince or Triple H. Like, they don't really care. They're just going to watch. It's consistent programming for them. And they watch every week, Raw, SmackDown, maybe even NXT. So Triple H has to cater to those folks. Like, he can't change it up too much and upset that apple cart. But at the same time, he knows that there's new audience out there to be had. AEW has proven this, right? AEW has proven that there is a non-WWE audience out there who desperately wanted to watch wrestling. Now, I don't know how many of those people Triple H can get back, or maybe there are some fringe folks out there as well. But how long do you think the fan base is going to give Triple H in order to make some of these changes that they're kind of waiting for? Like, I know a lot of people who are not major WWE watchers, and this is why I wanted to ask you the question, because I know that you don't watch weekly as well for your own reasons. But how long do you think it'll take people where they'll go, we're going to give Triple H this chance, to, it's the same thing and I'm out again?
Yeah, that's a good question, because you look at, that core audience that WWE has, the ones that are going to watch no matter what. What is that number? Is it, is it 1.8 million? Is it less than that? It's hard to say. They're really trying to grasp the the people that are on the fringes, the, I dare say, lapsed fans, but almost lapsed fans, you know, the people, you're not going to get all these people back from the Attitude Era when 8 million, 10 million people, whatever it was, you know, were watching both shows. It's, some people just have just completely moved on with their lives and they're like, ah, they remember the stars, but you're not going to get them to sit for a 3-hour Raw every week. So it's a, really, it's a question of how do you, those fringe people, how many can you get back and really buy into? I think we've seen a little bit of a bump with it. I was, I kind of, not to sound smug, I kind of laughed a little bit because when he first took over, because people thought there was going to be like, there was a sentiment with media members and also fans. The fans I'm not surprised about because fans should be optimistic because that's what being a sports fan, it's being an entertainment fan, it's what we are. We have to be optimistic. Sure. And because life as a pessimistic fan, I mean, I, even though I'm a Boston sports fan, it's kind of my DNA, but it's, you know, it's fun being optimistic as well. But, you know, people are like, oh, they thought change was going to happen just like that. And change being like, we're back to 1997 again. Everything's,
right,
you know,
right.
TV 14 and everything's crash TV, you know, and that everything was going to change right away. And those people probably may have not had father-in-laws before, and especially people that have father-in-laws that have built a multi-billion dollar company that's still alive. And his wife is, his daughter rather, is a CEO. And Paul Levesque is obviously married to that CEO. I mean, you're not going to insult Vince McMahon like that. And again, you have stockholders to worry about, Vince McMahon being the primary one. You have a perception and all these things. So how long is it going to take? It's going to be gradual no matter what. He's brought back a few of his own guys and girls, and that's good. Those are easy changes that you can make. I think being coherent with storylines and not making fans feel insulted, that's something that's going to take a little while. You know, people, it's funny, people like, they feel like they're trying to, it's like, I'm a big Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul fan, and that's a big fan theory show. And it's like, the WWE Raw, it's like, oh, I can see this change and this change and this change. And people are really looking for things other than just kind of letting it happen and run its due course. The numbers are gonna tell us. It's hard to say. I think to me, you give through, you know, I'm willing to give it through the end of the year, to be honest, because you're gonna get some of the cycles with some of the bigger events, the smaller premium live events, and you're really kind of gonna see as someone settles into a new job 6 months in. But, you know, to me, what makes it hard to watch is the camera cuts and the zooming. As a viewer, I can't watch it. And that makes it hard. I've tried, you know, can great storylines and buzz from the outside change that for me? It might, but it is hard when you're just trying to let my brain take in this moment of what I'm seeing. And there's a cut here, a cut here, a cut here, cut here. It makes it hard to focus, at least for me. I've had younger fans and even some of our staff to say that those things don't bother them as much. That could be an age thing. And we're talking about kind of learning from different fans and younger fans and what have you. That's one example of how things are changed. So, yeah, I'm willing to give it, through the end of the year, and, you know, not going to write it off as a failure if it's still the same WWE. But you got to give time, the guy time to have his runway and kind of get used to the job and settle in. And, you know, I know he said first day thinking, but I mean, he's been with the company, what, 3 decades. So I know he's saying that. It's really hard to have that when you are in the family and you've also lived it for, again, 3 decades in the same place.
Yeah, I want to have a little bit bigger of a WWE creative conversation here in a second. You mentioned, you know, the fringe fans' worst enemy here, Kevin Dunn. We'll talk about that as well in a few minutes. But one thing going back, this whole idea of second day rights, which currently is held by Hulu. And that is the way that I watch Raw and SmackDown. I don't watch it live. And the people who watch that 3-hour version live, I'm awe-inspired by them because that is a hard watch for me. Now, I can watch the 90-minute Hulu cut the next day, and it is usually a very easy show to watch. They take the best of the show, and they put it into 90 minutes, and the commercials are out. And it is generally a quality watch for me. SmackDown is the same exact show, just without the commercials. And SmackDown is generally an easy watch as well, depending on your taste. It's just that Friday night thing is really hard. So I kind of wonder, because of how I watch this show, I may be overvaluing the importance of these next day rights. And I imagine they're going to leave Hulu and possibly go to Peacock. That seems to be like a seamless transition for them. But did Nick Khan say anything about that?
Well, he was asked about on the call today if they were going to be looking at packaging the next day Raw rights for within a bigger TV deal, which again, he has been consistent and he's a smart guy. He keeps talking every time about streaming services getting in the mix with live events, live sports and everything. And he always seems to cite 4 to 6 different examples of fringe leagues, group sports that are getting new deals.
And F1 basically being one of the bigger ones, right?
He talked about F1 today because he was asked about basically their move to go to. So let me start with the secondary rights. So he was asked about pairing those in. He gave a very CEO answer, basically saying that they're trying to walk the line of monetizing short term and long term, which to me is what he's saying is we're not sure yet. We want to see, like, I think ideally they would like to separate them out, because if you can get on Hulu, NBC Universal, and then also get on Fox, if you have your product, I mean, every sport does this now, some to their detriment, which I think MLB has come up quite a bit with how many places you can see games and what have you. If you can spread your product out, that's a great move for you, because not everyone watches the same network. Sure. So you have the chance of potentially kind of getting someone there. So, with the secondary rights, it's funny, like, he started mentioning this about a year ago because the deal was going to be up. I never think of second day watching a Raw in the second day ever. I think of, I'm just going to go to YouTube. If I need to really watch something I may miss, or on my DVR, I can just fast forward and do it that way. That's how I watch it. I'm interested in what the numbers are behind that, because clearly there must be some sort of value to them, or they decided a year ago to start seeding a narrative of these rights are actually big. And, secondary rights for, traditional sports games are not necessarily as big, but this is. Going back to the streaming element, he was asked about, essentially, do you want to just do a streaming only deal, or do you want to try to do a mix of both, or linear only? And he mentioned that, they're looking at everything, of course, but that F1, he thought it was smart that they stuck with ESPN and more of a traditional network and not fully streaming.
Because they need to grow. They need to grow their audience, and that's the best way.
Yeah, they need more people on it. So yeah, this deal is going to, to me, it's the biggest story now. I mean, obviously now that Vince is gone, this is now the biggest story is WWE's rights deal, AEW to a much lesser extent. But, say WWE is able to double their revenue via a new deal. Say all of a sudden they go from, $3 billion combined to $6 billion or $5 billion, or say Fox or NBCU makes a bid to buy them. What do they want to do with that money? What I'm interested in, like, if they stay not private, but if they stay, stay their own company and don't sell, what are they looking at long term that they don't have the money to do now? Like, if they got another $4 billion or $3 billion in the bank for new rights deals, what else are they looking to do? That's what I'm really fascinated by, because there must be a plan to do something. International expansion. I don't know. Like, what would this company do with an extra $2 or $3 billion in the bank? I'm fascinated by that question.
You mean they're not going to give it to the wrestlers?
Oh yeah, right, exactly. I'm sure there'll be some trickle down.
Yeah, a little bit of bumps.
As much as people give Dave crap for certain stuff he says or what have you, I think one of the smartest things that he's brought up and doesn't really get picked up on or talked about as a talking point is that, for as much talk as UFC fighters and MMA fighters need a union, WWE wrestlers need a union. The roster should be making 3-4x what they're making now.
Yep.
Whatever Cody Rhodes is making should be, so much more. That story came out, I think Dave had it last year, was, Brock, or it might have been this year, Roman Reigns and Brock make, I think, about $5 million a year each or something like that. That was kind of the low estimate or whatever it was at the time. Those guys, you could argue, should be making 15 to 20. The top guys in the brand, your top performers make the most money. Look at any other sport there is, but yet it's never talked about and it'll never happen because of a lot of the same reasons as UFC. But that's one of the things he's talked about before and he's tried to kind of beat the drum for, but has not been picked up as an industry talking point. And that's something I wish I wish would happen.
You make a great point, and you could even argue that the wrestlers should make even more than what are 15 to 20, because what does the visibility of them, if we talk about someone near and dear to your heart, Tom Brady, right?
Yes.
Tom Brady makes a salary, and he often took a little bit of a pay cut with the Patriots so that you guys could fill some spots. But how did he make up that money? Well, it was through outside endorsements. WWE wrestlers currently cannot make any outside endorsements. So you could argue that they deserve to make even more money than they do for that reason, because at least, you know, LeBron James probably makes about $40 million or so a year playing basketball, but he makes way more than that through Nike, through his other deals that he has. The tequila brand is new. Like, he's got all of these other irons in a fire, which is why he's going to be, if he's not already, a billion-dollar athlete. And pro wrestlers and mixed martial artists cannot do that off of their names, because their names are sort of owned by their companies. So it's another thing. And we could talk about this stuff forever, because I love it. And, you know, I'll probably talk to you off air, but I also want to bring you on the Fight Game podcast so that we can talk more about this. But let's kind of steer towards the WWE creative side of things here. You mentioned Kevin Dunn. Without mentioning Kevin Dunn, you mentioned Kevin Dunn about his work, which is why you're not comfortable watching. And so let's say in a perfect world, not perfect for him, perfect for fans who don't like these cut the way that the pro wrestling for WWE shot today. Let's say that he's gone and they replace him, and it's a much more conventional way of shooting pro wrestling. What other things would it take to bring you back as a fan? And maybe you don't get back to that like day-to-day fan that we were when we were younger, but just as someone who is actually interested in watching every week, interested in following up with what's going on every week, interested in, you know, maybe on Peacock, it's live on a Saturday night. Yeah, you know, let's watch. Let's see what they have. What do you think it would take to change you back to that kind of fan?
Different styles of wrestling. I think that's one of the other huge ones as well. This, I can appreciate the desire to keep talent safe, but I also, you know, one of the things I enjoy more about AEW or indies or what have you is that there's different styles, you know, and that's been talked about to death where, you know, when, you know, people were talking about the territories or anything like that, they would go learn all these different things other places. There's not just one way to do it. And forever, it's been this traditional WWE style. I'll give you an example. I filled in on coverage for WWE main event this past week, and it was Ali versus T-Bar and Cedric Alexander versus Shelton Benjamin. So these are matches they filmed before Raw, you know, trying to get the crowd kind of into it, get the cameras right, make sure the lighting's good, all that stuff. So it's a Hulu show, and it's essentially a clip show with two matches thrown in. And these matches are always the same. It's always the formula. It's, you know, the face is up early. Heel gets the heat right before going into the break. And then after the break, you have a little bit of a back and forth. There's at least one rest hold in the middle. And then you go home and it's done. And to me, it's like, you know, I wish that they would experiment more with different styles. And it does not have to be John Moxley style blading yourself or, you know, blood and guts or anything, but just something different. I mean, they have talent stars from Mexico who are just watered down by the style. So many, you know, cruiserweights, I guess you could say, who just were kind of just watered down by the style. It's like, that's, you want, when you watch wrestling, and to me, when you watch wrestling, go to shows, whatever, you want to have something you just don't see all the time, and you want to feel like, wow, that is amazing. These are highly paid professionals. Let's see them do what they really can do. And there's a way to do it. And yeah, so to me, yeah, having different styles, I think is important. I think, you know, they've had created some buzz with free agents. I think that's a big thing. You know, Cody coming in, that was a big move in how they really kind of elevated him up. I expect that to continue in the next year. And as they bring new people on and kind of give them a little bit of a their own kind of runway to be bigger stars. So I think that the style how they shoot the wrestler, just get rid of the camera cuts and just let me kind of take this in. That would be one. And then also create a product that feels buzzworthy, and not just buzzworthy to the WWE bots and the, you know, stand up for WWE people and all that stuff, or media who's just trying to say positive things about everything. Like real buzz, where stuff where just like, oh, I watched this clip, and stuff that made a friend of mine who sometimes watches wrestling would text me about and be like, that was an awesome match. And then you watch it and you're like, wow, that's a legit awesome match, not just a, you know, e-bot saying that. So yeah, I think a few of those things, I think if you kind of bring those in the equation, the 3 hours is what the 3 hours is. But I think if you can, yeah, if you can make 75, 80% of a show watchable in this era, I think you're doing pretty good and make it stand out. That's what I'm looking for.
I want to get your thoughts on AEW here in a second, because a lot of what you're describing is what AEW and Tony Khan seemingly try to do. But let's hang on for a little bit longer with this WWE thing, because I have another question for you as it relates to young talent. Now, I think, you know, for years and years and years, the idea that, you know, you need young talent to take to be the next folks, to be the next stars. And Vince McMahon kind of went the other way. He's like, no, we have these guys who are over, and we're going to utilize them until they just can't do anything anymore. And that's kind of been what WWE has done. They want one guy to be their top guy, and then everyone else sort of falls underneath into these very similar roles. Would the pushing of young talent, and the reason why I'm asking this specific question, because Triple H ran NXT, and that was all about bringing in new folks, utilizing some independent name power, you know, some new WWE folks from the PC. And so it was like this a little bit more of a hybrid, but he has it on his resume that he likes pushing new guys. Now, he's never done it at this level on a Raw or SmackDown in the main brand, but it was kind of, he was the dandy, right, for NXT. And I would imagine that he wants to bring some of that to the main roster. Is that important to you? And do you think we're going to see some of the older guard kind of slowly leave and then, you know, start to see some new stars?
Yeah, that's hugely important, you know, because you have to, you know, in this era of you can watch hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of wrestling, you have to do things that are going to feel fresh and to stand out. And having those interminglings with new talent coming up, I think that's important. And one thing that I am confident about is that before, when NXT talent got called up, there was no plan. They were dropped within a couple of weeks. And think of how many talents we've seen that have exited for AEW, left the business altogether, or just never really achieved the heights that they should have, because they just couldn't. There was no push behind and no drive, and it just felt no interest. And I think with Triple H, the interest is going to be when someone gets called up to now all of a sudden change their name, do all these different things and make things different, right? So I'm confident in that. I mean, I think of like Ricochet came to mind, you know, and he was a guy that, you know, if there was going to be real change, it would be Levesque saying, go out there and have a banger of a 12-minute match with wrestler X. No storyline really involved. Let's just do a showcase and see what you can do. You know, chains are off. Let's just go. That would be interesting to me, going back to styles and things like that. But calling up young talent and have them kind of making sure there's a plan for them to fit in, that's usually important, because, I mean, you look at injuries. AEW's suffered a ton of injuries right now and kind of having some issues with that. But, I mean, look at WWE, Seth Rollins, you know, all these guys are getting older and they're having families. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch have a young one now. Becky Lynch obviously on the shelf. So you want to have, you know, in those cases where, you know, wrestling is so unpredictable, you have people get injured all the time. You want to have people that you can bring up if you're like, look, we have a plan 3 months from now for X and we have a big gap here. Is there anyone that's ready that we could call up? Is it a Zoe Stark? Is it a Wrestler X, whoever it is? How do we do that? You know, bring them in the right way and not make him just part of the same, make him part of the same fabric, but make him a different color that stands out from the rest of the quilt, I guess you could say. And so often it's brand over star. I don't expect him to change that much, but yeah, it would be nice of them to be like, you know what, this is a little bit different, and this is why, and really kind of get the rocket on the back. I mean, look at, you know, I mean, Gunther that they brought in. Obviously, he's changed his body completely, looks, you know, completely different. They're kind of, you kind of getting that sense that they see that a little bit with him, and that's fun to see him. You know, the time when he's, you know, going to interact with a Seth Rollins or someone a little bit further up the card. The stuff we used to get excited about in the day, like in a Royal Rumble, where you'd see a Hogan mix up with a mid-carder, which you'd never see in a singles match, but maybe there's some seeding there for something down the road. So that's what I like, is the fact that, or hope for, is that you have some of these guys, when they do get called up, that there's a plan for them, and that eventually they get in that mix with the top guys, invigorates them a little bit, kind of freshens things up, and then you have a really holistic, full functioning developmental and main roster as well.
Okay, so let's move on to AEW, because I know that the wrestling that you are watching these days is AEW, but you had reached out to me over the weekend with a frustration over a Friday show, AEW Rampage. I made sure to watch it. I don't always watch it because I don't really feel like it's must-see TV, but I did watch it because I wanted to talk to you about it, and I was terribly underwhelmed by this TV show. The numbers proved a little otherwise. Maybe it's Orange Cassidy. I know Dave said Last Jedi gave them a great lead in. Brian Danielson, whatever yeah. It was, you know, it's a mix of all of those things. But what was it about that TV show that you were so frustrated about?
And not to get too hot takey, but I watch this and I tweet some stuff about it. It's interesting. A lot of people would like the tweets, and I get responses from other ones. It's basically, we're kind of like, okay, boomer, you know, anything that takes me that hot. Yeah, exactly. I should be used to that by now. So the two things that stood out were, Hook had came out for a promo, essentially an open challenge for the FTW title, which is not a real title. Like, it's nothing that they acknowledge in terms of, like, in their AEW championship history or something like this. And Taz has said as much, right? It's just he hasn't said it's an ornament, but it's like, I know people get annoyed by that when, some people call that stuff that, but it's not like, it's the only members that have held it are members within Team Taz. It's not like a belt that's traded back and forth or has been held by, you know, Hangman Page or something. You know, it's not one of those titles. So for his first, you know, he does this open challenge, and Zach Clayton, who I recognize the name because I edit our dark reports. Yeah. So I've seen him on there before. And he's one of the guys that come in these, you know, trios matches to the Dark Order, or, you know, a tag team match or whatever. And he had they pumped him up a little bit when AEW came to Atlantic City. He got a win over Serpentico on Elevation. He used to be on Jersey Shore. Or no, sorry, he's married to JWoww, who was on Jersey Shore.
I don't know if they're married, but I think they're together. And he's okay. So the Jersey Shore, that was like the famous Jersey Shore, like, that's come and gone. But they do like a seasonal family vacation show that when it debuted, it did pretty big numbers, but now it doesn't really do big numbers anymore. But he's involved in that somehow.
So he came out and challenged Hook for this, you know, this open challenge. He's won one match in 10 outings in AEW Dark and Dark Elevation. He's never been on TV before. And I'm like, this first one is kind of addictive, because, like, this kind of goes back to the Cole Carter thing people were annoyed about when he came out and challenged Ricky Starks for the FTW title. It's weird. It kind of all revolves around this FTW title. It wasn't the person as much as they have a stockpile of talent that they're not using, and including Dark regulars. And a couple people like, well, he has to win in a minute. Why does he have to win in a minute? But at this point, we've seen Hook do 2-second, 2-minute squashes. Let's kind of evolve it a little bit. He's not getting work outside AEW. He's not working the indies and getting better. I think we're at that point. He just had a match against Tony Nese at the pay-per-view last time out, I think it was. Let's get some 5-minute matches. And so one person's like, well, who would you have in there? I'm like, I don't know. If you want to have a good 5-minute match against someone that you can beat, like, Captain Sean Dean is a dark regular. He's a guy they like in AEW. He can go. He'll give him a good 5-minute match. I mean, if you don't, kind of one of the things that is the issue is Tony Khan doesn't want to seem to beat a lot of people. And when you don't beat anyone, you kind of end up in the stasis where programs stretch about, you know, I don't know, 25% longer than they should. We get those feelings of like, kind of, when is this match going to happen? In a sense, they're kind of stretching things out. So that stood out to me. And then at the end of the show, you know, kind of really putting the he really likes this faction of Ari Daivari, Parker Boudreaux, Slim J, and Sonny Kiss. And it's no problem with individual performers. It's just that you have 3 hours of national TV a week, and you have, again, a stockpile of talent you're not using. Get off the thing of you can't beat people. You can. It's what you do after that really helps. And put on some great matches. Buddy Matthews made his return on Wednesday. Put him in on a match on Rampage instead. Or, you know, figure out just some things. Wrestlers can go more than once a week on your TV. I was watching this, and I'm like, I wish it was 21 again. Not for the pandemic stuff, but for the creative. There's so many guys that, granted, there's a lot of injuries, but there's also, I think there's a lot of, let's hold this guy off. Let's hold this girl off. Let's do this. Let's do this. And it's just like, I don't think you have a lot of time to waste. And I feel like on Rampage, you know, they did a pretty good number of the Danielson promo. That's, you know, that stuff is good. But to me, like, bring up someone to take up TV time that has never been on the TV before. It's not someone you're all of a sudden going to get behind. Then this faction, which I just, you know, build them up on Dark, Creative Real Developmental Group. He says Dark and Dark Elevation are developmental. Build them up there so that way when they finally get the call up, you got to establish levels. When they get the call up, then it's going to feel like something. And it just feels like another lower mid-card act. And to me, it's like you have so many guys that just, and girls, give them the rock. You know, Athena is someone they signed as a free agent. You know, I know they're finally kind of building the Jade thing, but it has taken forever to get here. You know, there's so many talents that are just being underutilized that I don't know why he's spending the time he does with the little time that he has. And even like on Dynamite, you know, the Factory. Why are we seeing the Factory so much on AEW Dynamite? Like, you're trying to get a new TV deal. You're trying to increase ratings, get new fans. To me, like, your show is going to be hot from start to finish. You can't have any layups, and or very, very few. And to me, there's just so much of just layups and people just not wrestling. They're in there. It's just a frustration. He's got this really talented roster, but I think he's too scared to beat anybody that he doesn't get the most value out of it.
Your comparison to 21 is you know, that's brought up a lot. And I think we have to, you know, bring up that, you know, there's just more injuries this year to main event talent. So if Punk and whatever this MJF story is, I'm still unsure about what it is, but, you know, Punk and Danielson and Omega and these guys were on top, then, you know, maybe some of those programs would be better than what we're seeing. So that's one thing for sure. And maybe what that means is that they're going to have a killer Q4, right? Maybe their Q4 is just going to be off the charts because all these people are coming back. But I want to go back to one thing you said about how he's utilizing talent. My co-host John LaRocca on the Fight Game podcast, he calls it collecting wrestling toys or wrestling figures. And I'll explain what he's talking about, which is, if you remember, I remember, you know, when I was really young and I first got into WWF, they had the LJN rubber wrestlers. You'd go to the store, you'd see someone, you'd never seen it before as a toy. Oh, I got to get Corporal Kirshner. And so then, you know, beg mom to spend the $10 to buy Corporal Kirshner. Yep. And so you open it and you play with it and you're like, but it's Corporal Kirshner. I'm going to get back to Hogan and Andre. And so you just throw it aside, right? It's like, oh yeah, it looked cool because I didn't have it. But now that I have it, I want to go back to Hogan, Andre, and Hogan Orndorff. And I think that's what John means, in that there's all this talent out there, and Tony grabs him and he's got to shine on him for a week or two, and then they just go away. And I find myself going like, wait, what happened to X? And then someone will tell me, oh yeah, they just won a match on Dark. And I'm like, well, okay, that doesn't mean anything to me because I'm not watching Dark. But there is a balance that has got to be really hard for him with all of the number of wrestlers that he has under contract fitting into what you said is only really 3 hours of television. That is something that hopefully, you know, as he continues to grow as a booker, as he continues to do this job, you know, he'll figure out a better way to do that, because there are moments where, I mean, one of them could be someone like Miro. Like, I have no idea if Miro's not there because he's hurt, or they don't know what to do, or they're doing what you said, which is holding off this moment because they don't want to get to the match, because once they get to the match, somebody has to lose, and then the program's kind of over. It could be that. So, but, you know, it's all of those things, and I agree with what you're saying. So we did it with Triple H. As far as some of the things that would be better to Josh Nason's wrestling fandom, are there a couple things that Tony could do to change it up a little bit that would appease you as a fan a little bit more?
Yeah. Make the most out of your TV time. Make it worth our while. I think, you know, don't assume, and this is such a big debate as well. I know Brian and Lance have talked this before, certain elements where you have to ask, you know, is it like Brian was talking the other day about on the Brian Vinnie show about the mixed AAA tag team titles. And do they expect people to know what these are? And all that. And that was obviously a match on Rampage as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have, say, a million people a week. We'll kind of put that number out there. You have that many people a week. Don't assume that 95% of them understand all these little nuances like New Japan, that they understand all the history about it. And you're like, okay, we'll throw it in a 60-second video package or whatever, and that'll kind of bring people up to speed. Kind of like what they did with Forbidden Door a lot. And there was a lot of factors going into that. But don't assume that people know. Treat everyone like they're a third grader in a sense. And that doesn't mean you have to dumb down the product. But in terms of explaining things, try to get someone outside the bubble to be like, does this make sense? And I think that's a big thing. Don't be afraid to beat people. You have the buy-in from fans. I think that's the thing they have going with them.
There's definitely a trust factor there. 100%
there is.
Trust factor.
And he's earned it. I mean, he has earned it to an extent. I mean, he's got them to this point. Where a startup company 3+ years in has a national TV deal. And sometimes I think we take these things for granted, because you look at all these other promotions that Impact would love to have 2 hours on TBS every single Wednesday. They're not going to have MLW would kill for it. They probably kill me for it, they don't have that. AEW has it. They have 3 hours on national TV a week. That's great. They have an infrastructure there that's working. I think they've figured out some things on the talent relations end that hopefully will work for them. So he's earned it. But I think it's the don't be afraid to beat people. And it's obviously what you do after that. I would never advocate for cutting roster members or things like that just for the sake of it. But I think if we're being real, like there's, you know, 20, 25 talents on there that if they were to not be on AEW TV again, that would be fine. If these are people going to seed Ring of Honor, that's another thing. It's like, you got to figure out this Ring of Honor thing. Yeah. And there's so many, like, again, introducing more people like Josh Woods into the mix. Other people on Dark that are coming there. Again, it seemed to be more earmarked for ROH. Where's Samoa Joe, for example? That's another kind of pin in that. Where has he been? Why can't he have a match on Rampage? I think the focus on AEW, stop pushing the AAA mixed tag team titles and other titles from other organizations. Focus at home first, and really take your 3 hours that you have and be like, is this the best 3 hours we can do? And if we beat wrestler X here, is that really going to kill us 6 months from now? It shouldn't, but they got to be starting to figure out like, how do we like, look at Hangman Page post his title run that ended. I mean, like, what are they doing? I mean, they're doing this thing now with the whole trios thing, but what about that time in between? And they're champions. What they do after they lose the title is always a letdown for me. Like, they never have a big thing for them or a revenge factor to try to get a title shot again. I mean, the fact that we just saw a rematch between Jericho and Moxley for the title that was lost, like, what, a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever it was, probably even more than that. That's crazy, right? I mean, that's been this long. And I don't need WWE Vince-style rematches every single week, but don't be afraid to run the same matches back. If they're good, again, you give the ball to your talent, it's not going to be the same match. That's the best thing.
Yeah.
If you see some of these talents and tag teams go at it 2 weeks in a row, awesome. If they're great, which a lot of these wrestlers are great, they're going to make a difference. So you're like, I want to see a third one. You know, I think it's those type of things of make that 3 hours the hottest 3 hours that you can, and save the mid-card stuff for Dark and Dark Elevation. You'll find audience there. Let them figure it out. And then when it's time to call them up, it's time to call them up.
All right. We're going to move on here. The one thing I will say is I think my biggest issue with AEW is for some reason, independent wrestling is canon, and it just gives them an excuse to not introduce folks correctly. And so I wish that would change a little bit. And I also wish that there would be some cliffhanger stuff from Dynamite to Rampage to make me want to see Rampage. Like something happens on Dynamite that carries over to Rampage, and I've got to watch to see the end of this story. I would like to see that. Raw and SmackDown used to do that very well in the beginning. They don't, obviously different brands now, so they don't really do it, but those would be mine. All right. Last thing here, since I have you and you have your UFC expertise and fandom, I was kind of interested in Valerie Lareda, who, I mean, you can't not have seen her because she has such a high profile on Instagram. She's more influencer than she is Bellator fighter, and more power to her because she figured out the whole marketing thing. And, you know, she's got the looks to go with it. That all plays a part. And she recently signed a deal with NXT. Now, I don't know when she's going to debut, but I think she was at the WrestleMania party in L.A. I don't think she was in a high profile spot, but I definitely saw photos. Are there other MMA folks? Now, it's not only UFC, right? There's Bellator, there's PFL, there's ONE, there's all these different organizations. In your watching and your viewing and you're seeing folks on Twitter or Instagram, are there folks out there in the UFC or the MMA world who you think could make a transition, a crossover? You know, because WWE right now, you look at Matt Riddle, he's one of the best guys they got going. We just saw him, a member of this website, Filthy Tom Lawler, just was in G1. So I was just wondering if you saw any possible crossovers like that for WWE or for AEW.
Sure. Yeah, you first asked me this question, and I had a little bit of a reaction inside because it drives me crazy when people treat wrestling as a junk drawer for sports. And when not saying you, but I'm saying in general, when so many of these UFC stars or what have you are like, I want to do WWE, and they just like, it's like everyone's like, oh, they should go to WWE, they should do this, just because they can actually like cut a promo or they're a little bit of a star. Like Israel Adesanya mentioned this, Conor McGregor's mentioned this before. And it's almost kind of like, oh, no matter what, they'll take me. So I'm just going to kind of throw this out there. Fabricio Verdum mentioned this before. you remember that? Like, all of a sudden, he's like, I'm just going to go to WWE. Whenever they kind of clarified, it was more Lucha Libre he wanted to do, I believe, and what have you. So I had to kind of recalibrate a little bit. I've been thinking about this all day. The two that stand out, one is going to be an obvious one. One is going to be a not obvious one. The obvious one to me is Francis Ngannou. And someone that the UFC has completely dropped the ball with contract negotiations. Another example of just pay the guy his effing money. Like he is, you're a huge boxing fan. I used to be, especially the heavyweight division. This is the guy that every casual fan that's ever been in sports wants to see. A big guy that can knock people out. Muscles, just he has the look, has the attitude, and, this is who people want to see in the UFC, is managed just for their own stupidity. And they have all this money. And it's like, why are you screwing around with this guy? Like, this is the guy. We should have had the Jones fight by now. Whatever. To me, that he has such a physical presence. To me, he comes number one to mind just because of the presence alone. You talk about Lesnar types and things.
To agree with you, he was in the Fast and Furious movie. He had a small part in that as the big, you know, the big bad guy. And, you know, you mentioned boxing. This weekend is Anthony Joshua and Usyk, which is the big heavyweight fight. You know, Tyson Fury's kind of on the outs now. He keeps saying he's retired. And it's so unfortunate because that fight, isn't getting any play outside of hardcore boxing. And I'm sure in the UK, it's getting a lot of play because those are two big stars there. But like, I wonder, you know, I wonder the reason why. Some of it is distribution, like the DAZN kind of screwed up this whole thing and they couldn't find a pay-per-view thing for it. So I'm sure that caused them to not push it as much. But yeah, like that monster heavyweight, you know, I think he would be fantastic as far as the look. Now, you know, could he do the stuff that he would need to do in order to be successful? Who knows? But, you know, that would be definitely a great guy to try with.
Yeah. So Francis Ngannou for sure. I think, I mean, if they were to bring him over and really get behind him, Lesnar-esque, I think he has that whole package of, you know, he could be a standout, especially if you just stick someone that can talk like a Paul Heyman or someone like that. To me, he's the guy. He's the guy. The other one that came to mind, and I don't know why it came to mind, but I kind of thought about it a little bit more and figured in my head, Beck Rawlings. Remember Beck Rawlings?
Yeah.
Former UFC fighter, Paige Van Zandt fighter a couple of times, went to Bellator, doing BKFC now as well. It's crazy because she's not a big star by any means, but she has a distinct look with the tattoos, the blonde hair, and she also has some attitude. She can talk. And not talk in a fake pro wrestling way, but really like when she does interviews, she has conviction behind what she says. She has just this unique thing that, you know, I don't know if it would be a big mainstream star, but if she was like, I'm going to go train to be a wrestler for a couple of years, I would buy her a lot more than I'd buy Paige Van Zandt, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah.
Those are two just completely, different walks of the park that I or different sides of the lane that I could see, making some sort of crossover if they were to commit to it. You know, there's several Brazilians, and I can't remember the names off the top of my head. Claudia Delia, it could be one that if she was to train and get behind it, she is kind of she has a very good look, kind of cool looking tattoos, and that kind of has the look. She's smaller, but, you know, could that be someone you train for down the road? People like Cyborg never really came to mind in terms of a crossover. I think you get a one.
What about Joanna?
No, I don't think she has the look for it. I think she's small. You know, she has the promo skills for it, but doesn't have there's nothing there that immediately makes me think she could cross over. And I think she may have been one that kind of mentioned it before too. It's hard because, you know, I think not to get caught up on looks, but there is a certain look style. Valerie Rita kind of hit it out of the park. She has the full, you know, the full package with that. Plus the athletic background, which is great as well. It's hard because we kind of know what it takes, and we've seen people from the indies and so on. Anyone could stand out if they're really kind of willing to put the time and commitment into it. But in terms of, you know, people that are looking to come over and could make an instant impact, it's so hard. You know, it's just hard because there's so much talent out there. But Ngannou and Beck Rawlings would be my two that come to mind.
One makes sense, Beck.
One may not make sense.
Well, yeah. I like Beck because she was able to, through social media and through her personality, get more over than her career, right? Like, she's a little bit more famous than her MMA career would have proven otherwise because she's got something going for her.
Someone like Ryan Bader as well is a kind of a dark horse. If you're looking for like a Tom Lawler type, you get Bader in there, you give him like a couple of years of training or what have you, might be something there too. There's just throw that away.
Interesting.
Out there.
Interesting one. All right. So we're out of time here, but I wanted to give you the floor to promote whatever you need to promote. Before that, just thank you for being here. This was so much fun. And I really appreciate you filling in for Andrew. And like I said, I want to get you on some other stuff, specifically Fight Game Podcast at some point pretty soon. But go ahead. Floor is yours as we get out of here.
Sure. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter, Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. I do an occasional podcast for this very website, hoping to get one done this week. Definitely one for next week for sure. I am a contributing editor for this very website, again, along with Joe Courier, Brian Rose, Ethan Renner, and one of our talented news writers, Ian Carey, along with all of our other contributors. So thanks for checking out coverage there. So I kind of do stuff every day as needed. You can always follow us, Wrestling Observer, WONF4W. Again, I do the podcast. And if you're into indie wrestling and you have an IWTV account and you watch Limitless Wrestling at all, that's an indie promotion out of Southern Maine. I do a podcast for them as well, kind of outside this universe. Just search for Limitless Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts. They do great stuff. I'm a little bit biased, of course, but they bring in some stars. It's a Vacation Land Cup season. It's a big tournament they run every year, and they do a lot of great stuff there. So you can check them out as well. But yeah, no, I appreciate being here. And yeah, this is someday I may try to make my video, my podcast video as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Guys, it's kind of top of mind. So we'll get there at some point, maybe this year. We'll see.
All right. Well, again, thanks to Josh. So for Josh, for producer John, who you heard at the very beginning of the show, and for Andrew, who's getting some healing done, hopefully, I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.